Okay, I'm checking the second side of the tape here. One, two, three, four, because we can't afford to miss these recollections. One, two, three, four, five.
In Moravia, a clerk of lumber industry in southern Moravia, and I had the false identity for Slovakia, where I was a butcher in Julius Korichansky from Žilina, northern Slovakia, butcher occupation, in our identity, which was perfect according to German ones, where we were issuing with them. I had a bicycle ride, fingerprints, and birth and rest of it, but all was false. We found it when we were adopted, they were perfect. Identity. That was the only things we could adopt it after we were adopted.
After Bewley, you said you went on this kind of fake run over France, or not a fake
run,
but you went over France and then, then you dropped with radar and so on.
Yeah, then we were dropped.
And then what happened? Were you sent to Italy then?
Yeah, then we went back for a rest and we were dentured down, prepared and everything for departure from London. All our denture repairs with a European Czech dentist. You know, we had a gold crown if he had some defect of the teeth and everything. Couldn't be done English way. Had to be done by Czech dentist and according to Czech dentistry, think so.
So it was a Czech dentist who did it?
Yeah.
Right.
And he did his own way as they do it in Czechoslovakia, everything.
And presumably you were given Czech clothing?
Czech clothing and everything, yeah. We had one suit, you know, made by Czech tailor and everything. Style, Czech style in that time, you know, where they used up there. And one ordinary clothes, Manchester clothes, they call it, corduroy, pants and jacket, you know, long one and there. But we chose that was a civilian clothes, but we chose from military the black beret from the tanks, which we kept. We decided when we were dropped, we keep them. So they could see German, we were a military person. And the British belts, canvas belts, and British, those things between the boots, what do you call them? Those canvas covers.
I know
here
what you mean. I can't remember the name.
Yeah, I don't know what you call them anyway. So we kept those things. So we were looking like a half military person. See, they were good for different arms, you know, to carry the belts and the rest of it. That was for water purposes and wet, getting the wet boots.
But these were not things you were going to take into Czechoslovakia.
Oh yeah, we took them.
Oh,
with
you took
us.
Them into Czechoslovakia.
Yeah. Secretly.
I see.
Against the orders.
Against orders,
yeah. We were, for example, one of the strictest order in the training was not to contact the families when we were dropped. We were dropped blind.
Okay, let's just, before we drop you into Czechoslovakia.
We were sent to southern Italy.
Where did you, when you went from England, how did you get to southern Italy? Did you fly?
From England, they flew us in three different groups, one group in three different planes, because there was a shortage of planes.
Can you remember where you flew from, which airport?
Yeah, I flew you from Swindon Airport in Churchill private plane, Churchill Winston Churchill plane, Commando York, with Mr. Churchill Batman in attendance, and Mr. Churchill pilot, that American.
Mr. Churchill was the pilot?
No, Mr. Churchill pilot.
Mr. Churchill pilot?
Yeah.
I see.
But he didn't use the plane and all the bombers were in action, see, that day.
Right.
And he gave a disposition to his private
plane. Can you remember the date of that, roughly?
Roughly when it was. Darling? 6th of June, we had a final phase of training in England. We received all our material, you know, for our action behind the line. And we were supplied of radar Eureka for receiving the planes. And we were also already trained in what you call the Morse for it, slow Morse for contacting the planes in bombing action, see? That was for a purpose of bombing, yeah. We got all the information when we were dropped behind the line already, before, see, in advance. And beginning of July, we were on the way to Italy.
Where did you go to in Italy?
We went from Swindon Airport. I was with two other members of our group in a plane only, in the Mr. Churchill planes, as I mentioned before, flying to Algiers. And from Algiers, we were left on our own, and our own discretions to get contact with a certain person up there which was waiting for us. We didn't know him, who it was. But that was an automatic arrangement, you know. We were told we will have a contact man on arriving in Algiers. He looks so-and-so, no names. So they were informed as well about us, see. We got in a contact, we were brought in an officer camp, military establishment in Algiers, where we stayed about 3 days for the rest of the group. And then there was another member arrive on his own, another load, and another two members, commander with a telegraphist arrived last in Algiers. Same establishment. We had 3 days. We spent 3 days in Algiers, swimming in the sea and so on. The only way we were is Dakota over to Italy from Algiers. We came to Brindisi Airport. That was in Allied hands already, and the front line was above the summer Monte Cassino. Above the Bari, town of Bari, port of Bari. We were brought to a place called Lauretto. It was a little establishment of the better of Italians, I would say. Owners, landowners, and a beautiful villa. There were about four villas together, beautiful.
What was the name of the place again?
Lauretto.
Lauretto.
It was close to town of Fasano. And Fasano is a little bit offshore between the Brindisi and Bari, half away. It's about 10 miles from the seashore of Adriatic. Then we had a further training and waiting. It was our waiting station, action station, in Italy.
Is this when you were told precisely what your mission was, or did you know?
We already knew what was our mission and everything.
Can you tell me now what that mission was?
Well, the mission was exact the mission we were instructed. We were going to Czechoslovakia with mostly organizing the resistance movement in Czechoslovakia, to organize the ex-military personnel, to organize approximately between 60 and 90,000 Czech military personnel, and we shall be supplied by British military equipment with 25 paratroop brigades, British paratroop brigades, with Czech command to help us to break the German army in a half between eastern and western front, cut them out.
Okay, can I just go over this so I understand?
Yeah.
So I just want to be sure that I understand it exactly. Mm. You were told that you were going to prepare the way.
Prepare the way for landing.
For a landing by British parachute brigades.
Yes.
I see.
25 British paratroop brigade.
I see. And when would they land? Were you told when they would be landing?
Well, we would be informed.
I see. So
by
what
radio.
What kind of...
By transmitter.
What kind of arrangements or what kind of preparations were you going to make before they arrived?
Well, we would have to train between 60 to 90,000 Czech ex-military personnel to be ready to go in arms.
Now, you were one group of six people.
Yeah.
When we were ready. You were Wolfram.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. Were there other groups? I mean, six people to prepare 90,000 is not very many.
No.
So were there other Czech groups who were supposed to be
doing
the same?
That was up to us to contact the underground movement, Czech civilian underground movement, with military background, see, which were there some generals and so on, still in underground movement. And we were in contact with them.
So you believed that, you thought, you were told that the British were going to send in this parachute brigade. Now,
I think they had a good intention to send them, see?
This is what I wanted to ask.
Yeah.
You think that they intended to do
that? Yeah, they had a good intention. I believe they had a good intention to send them, but...
Well, okay, tell me what happened next. At what point did you actually fly into Czechoslovakia? What point were you dropped?
Yeah, we were... before... We were in Italy in waiting station, action station, what do you call it. We had the red lights and the green lights, you know. Red lights were the action, was normally normal. When a green line came, we couldn't go anywhere, we had to wait. That was the action station, see. Green line, we had to wait federal orders to go back.
Were you in complete isolation here, just you Czechs?
Yeah, just amongst the... with the military personnel in a small surrounding.
Were they Czech military personnel or British?
Well, there was a Czech captain and a British intelligent.
And a British intelligence liaison officer.
Yeah, liaison. Well, they were mostly British. I mean, the only liaison officer was a Czech captain who stayed, and later on he was dropped as well.
So about how long were you there before you...
We were about, for example, that was July, August, September, about 2 months. In Italy, in a waiting station, which was terribly on the nerves, you know, and everything, because we had some group up there which completely mentally broke down and couldn't be sent, couldn't be dropped.
There was another Czech group there?
There was another Czech group waiting, and they had a hallucination, and especially when the full moon came up there, we were normally dropped on a full moon, so they could see. But our group chosen the just a dark night without a full moon. We chose it. And we chose it not to be dropped on a reception party.
That
just
was
blind.
Your choice. You had
that
right
was our choice.
Choose.
We didn't trust anybody because a lot of groups were failed and caught in a trap, see, before us. They never achieved their duty.
Why did you not want to drop to a reception committee? Were you afraid that
maybe... Well, they were giving us those, and we didn't trust those groups.
Why didn't you trust them?
Well, we heard not officially, but what we heard were a leakage from some other ones, you know, that there was some problem on the reception groups. And especially...
Someone was selling secrets to the Germans or something? Like
They were collaborating with Germans.
Some of the people who had been in Bari, you mean?
No, in Czechoslovakia.
Oh, I see, amongst the Czech resistance.
Yeah,
on
Czech
the
resistance. There were a lot of leakage up there. Because the Germans' intelligence broke in, you know, and especially after Heydrich problem, they killed them. People were too scared, see. And a lot of them broke, infiltrated by Germans, see, underground movement. So we didn't trust them. We were going to be sent blind and on the...
Is that what happened? You went blind?
Yeah. Blind mission, what we called. No reception with anybody.
How much notice did you have? How much...
Well, we had a notice. We had a green light. That was on the 13th of September, 1944. Friday, I remember. Good merit, 13th of Friday, too. And we were several of those things going, but they changed their mind. Something went wrong, see, before. And that day I said, well, we're going. That's our day. I had to get a letter from my wife, and we are on the way, I said to the group.
Were you the commander of the group?
No, I wasn't.
Can you tell me who the...
The commander was a...
Not necessarily the names, but the people, what were the positions and who was in the group?
They were the commander, Captain Ochisk, Staff Captain Ochisk at that time, and telegraphist Svoboda, and four other members of the group, which we had all different job in our group.
What was your job?
Well, I was a supplies officer.
Which means what exactly?
Food. But we changed that. Our group's four members, they were changing between the... There was intelligent, had one for a certain time, see, and so on. Then one had a supplies, and one had a different recognition and so on, you know, and organizing and so on. We had all our jobs behind the line.
These were all people who were in the Czech forces. These were all soldiers, were they?
No, we were dead in our paratroop group only. We had a different position.
Yeah.
We were changing them.
But the people in your group were all basically soldiers.
They were
soldiers
from... Yeah.
Right. They had all been in the Czech army
before
the war.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So there wouldn't... Would they all be pretty well of the same kind of political outlook?
Yeah, they were the same of them. All the, we believed we were of same political, but only one person, he wasn't, see. He was a little bit odd.
What was he?
Well, we found out after the war he was a communist. He turned the coat to communist. I think he was a sort of, he was a little person, dominating, very dominating person, aggressive, I would say, what I found him. And I watched him carefully. He had in his mind a lot of things, you know, which nobody would agree with it in a group. But he was a good fighter.
Do you think that he had been a member of the Communist Party?
No, I don't think so. He was a very, very lonely, aggressive, sadistic person. See? He was in the same squad with me. I knew him before. Very aggressive. And I had him in France in a sub-officer school, heavy machine gun sub-officer school. I had him right through, so I knew what was in him. But politically, we were in the same thing as anybody else to fight for the Nazis only. We didn't bother about the political view, who had what kind of a political view he had, anybody.
Were you worried at all about the possibility that after the war, the Red Army, the Soviet Army, might take over in Czechoslovakia? Were you worried at that point?
No, we didn't. In that point, we didn't worry at all. We had one achievement to do for the Nazi, and that's all. Try to win the war. Help to win the war. That's all what we had in mind. Nothing else. We didn't worry about the political view of different things.
Did you talk about politics at
all? Yeah, we talk, in the army, we talk about the politics. Yeah, we argue about the politics. You know, I argue with the ex-ministers in the same barracks, the Minister of Food and MP, Social Democratic MPs. He was sergeant, and I was sergeant. We argue in a barracks in the evening. We had all different political views and so on. We argue about it.
But amongst your group of six,
did
you discuss...
Oh, no. We didn't discuss the politically, nothing. Nothing. We were after one job, and accomplished our job. That's all.
Did you respect all the other people in your group?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we respect. Yeah.
What were the ages of the people involved, roughly?
Well,
very roughly.
I would say the one telegraphist and commander was the oldest person in a group.
What age would he be, roughly?
He was about, he's in his 70 now. And that's 63, 7 years older than me. So.
He'd be in his 30s already, would he? About 30?
Ah, in about 28.
28. And he was the oldest.
I was about, 20, 30, yeah. In his 30s, yeah. So was the other one in his 30s, telegraphist. And I was about 24, I think.
And your commander?
No, I was lieutenant then.
But the commander of the group was about how old?
He was about 30.
He was about 30, yeah.
Around about 30.
Right.
They were 6 to 7 years older than the rest of the group. Two of them.
Were you the only married one? Were there others?
No, commander was married in Czechoslovakia with a wife and child.
They were in Czechoslovakia?
Yeah, and telegraphist was his wife and child in Czechoslovakia. And I was married in Britain, only men married in Britain. Yeah. The rest of them were single. Three of them were single. The youngest member got killed at Bierski.
Okay, so you take off from Brindisi?
Well, we took from Brindisi on the 13th of September.
What kind of plane?
It was Halifax with New Zealand crew, young people. They were all around about 20, 21, all crew. And off we flew from Brindisi over Yugoslavian coast. We were on the Yugoslavian coast. We had a third anti-aircraft barrage.
This was a night.
Night, yeah. Then we flew further down across the Yugoslavia, across the Austria, Vienna. We were caught in anti-aircraft
flak and so
on. Light. You know, this, they caught us in a light and here to dive right on a light. And, we were bruised up there. It was spotted in a fuselage of the Halifax, but we were still bruised, you know, because suddenly he had to dive on the searchlight, you know. He was caught in a searchlight up there. Anyway, we got out and we flew over to Slovakia and followed the River Váh from southern Slovakia up to northern Slovakia and to Beskidy Mountains in Moravia, northern Moravia. Northern, that's on a border of Poland and Germany, you know, and Czechoslovakia, that part of the country. And of course, plane crew couldn't find a dropping point for us, but they were pretty close, they said. So they called the commander and they had a little discussion before the drop, you know, because they had a problem finding our dropping point. So he said, we could drop you 5 miles southeast of your dropping point. Would you accept? Because they couldn't find the dropping point on a map. But we guarantee we'll drop you 5 miles southeast of your dropping point. You agree? He said, yes, we agree. We had enough of it. We want to be dropped, see? So we agree on it. And our commander also agreed to be dropped on two rounds. First three, then next three, because it was in mountainous terrain. And we had to be dropped from about 600 feet. And 800 was a safety limit. But we didn't want to go in a valley, see? So between the mountains. And he had a problem up there, so he dropped the first three. And I was in group two. Leading member, you know, of jump. But he dropped the first three, he dropped the telegraphist, commander, and Chernota. No, Bierski, three, in first group. And we knew they made a mistake. One of them got leg bags with material, what we had, got caught in a hole when we were jumping. Three from a tail and three from engines, you know, jumping up. So first three dropped out and I said, well, they must be lost in a mountain terrain. They'd be separated. So we got together, last three got together, and we were dropped about on around about 150 feet together. They were jumping each other, you know. One of the quickest possible dropped up there. So I remember now that beautiful smell of the pine trees, you know, when I was above, when my parachute opened. Now I only prayed about for one by one square of potato field, and I was exactly dropping the side of the mountain of potato field below the house. And one dropped on the roof of the house, lay down, you know, one of those, straw roofs, you know.
Thatched roof.
Thatched roof, you know. Slay down, and dog was after him barking. And a third one was dropped nearby. So we got together after certain signal, we got together straight away. We were three already marching from a place, packed our parachutes and nest of it and marching away from it. But the first group was in terrible mess. They never got together.
The first group of three?
First group of three.
Never got together?
Never got together.
What happened to them?
But we had a luckily before the drop, we had a sort of rendezvous, agreement of rendezvous. If you don't get in a point one on a map, then 2 weeks later on a point two, different place. If you don't get after 2 weeks, 4 weeks in point two, 6 weeks on point three, rendezvous, see? Anyway, we were on a point one, waiting for 2 weeks. One member arrived. That was Ebierski arrived. Rendezvous number two, I beg your pardon, not number one.
After how long was this?
After 2 weeks.
Were you in the mountains? Or
in the mountains, yeah.
Where were you living?
Just in the woods, from our iron reserve and so on. No contact with the population.
You haven't met anyone at all?
No. We met the people, but no contact. We saw the people, but
did
no
they
contact.
See you?
No, I don't think so. We tried to avoid everybody until we were together. We were sort of lied to the last point of instruction, see, that time.
So Bierski, what turns
so
out?
So after 3 weeks, Bierski arrived. Very, very birded up, you know, unshaven, with a loaf of bread and one gun in a hand, no leg bags, nothing. He lost that by the drop, torn out, you know. It goes under the rope and dropped out and could never find it. And he was in a fight with that little pistol with a 3 SS and the police dogs. He shot the 2 police dogs and 1 SS, according to him. And it came like a wild man with the help of local people. He was a local person from the mountains too. He was born up there, see. So he arrived after rendezvous number two, which was 2 bridges, wooden bridges, you know, in a little stream in the side of the mountains. And I had some contact already with local people for a food supply. We were running short and so on. So I made a contact with the local people, woodkeepers and so on. They were pretty good people, I find. And then we had our commander arrive. About after 3 weeks and something, with help of local people. He was in contact with local people. And the trouble was that he could have found us before. But on a map, there were lots of wooden bridges together, only different position. There's about two kilometers different between them. And he chose the wrong one, commander. We were at the right one. So he found us with the help of local people, came to understanding. He found us, you know, which two wooden bridges we were. And we came in a contact with him, but the last one telegraphies never arrived.
So you never got together with your wireless operator?
We had a half of the wireless with us, and half of it he had. we had a radar with us, and that's all.
Did so he
ever? We couldn't get a contact with the Britain.
Did he ever turn up?
He never turned up. He was brought up in a trap. He was caught by Germans. He jumped in a trap. He came to number one rendezvous and he was caught up there. After 2 weeks.
What happened to him?
Well, somebody reported him to Germans, you know. He was going to that rendezvous for 2 weeks and not there all the time.
Do you know what happened to him after the Germans got him?
Well, he was taken to Gestapo station and tortured, you know, and everything, but he wouldn't betray nobody. He had a cover story, a lie cover story all the time, beaten, burned, fingers and bodies and everything, and beaten up, and the cold water, ice water on the head, and chains and everything, and he had that normal torture treatment all the time, but they never betrayed. He knew he lost his family. He knew his family was dead. Wife and everything.
They killed his family in reprisal?
Oh, no. They killed his family in reprisal of Heydrich. And he knew that. See? Before in 1942.
Did he survive the treatment?
He survived. They put him... The Germans try to keep you if you betrayed. If you give them all the information they wanted to know, then they got rid of you. But once you try to hold them, and if you could hold their torture and rest of it, if you didn't collapse, didn't betray it, and didn't tell them what they want, they try to hold you up in a hope they will get more information from you, see? So they sent him to concentration camp under observation, see? And he survived there. 9 months.
Until the end of the war?
Till the end of the war. Mm.
So the five of you worked together eventually?
Yeah, then we got eventually, we knew he was captured. We got information from people. We start organizing ourselves, you know, without the telegraphies and do our best.
So what was your plan at this stage?
In our plan, that stage wasn't to start. We start organizing certain things and come in a this underground movement and get a possibility to get a news to London.
Let me ask you something about your instructions here.
Mm.
You were under instructions to get in touch with the underground movement.
Oh, yeah.
Did they specify any particular underground
movement? No, they didn't know anybody.
So they didn't say anything like, do not contact the communists?
No,
or
no. It was up to us.
It was up to you?
Yeah.
Okay, you made a decision... What did you know about the underground movement in Czechoslovakia? Had you made a decision to try and contact a particular group?
See, Czech underground movement was in complete chaos. They had a contact with London, but they wasn't sure if it is true underground movement or if it is under the pressure of Germans or anything else. See, because it was in a chaos, all underground movement, and reorganizing completely. And London didn't know where they were with them. So that's why we were sent up there to find out and organize and send the information to London and so on and start the job, doing the job properly, organizing.
So in fact,
through them.
Having lost the wireless operator, you couldn't actually send any information back to London.
No.
So what did you try and then do? What was your plan then at that point?
We planned to get a intelligent information about the German troops locally and everything, police, how they work, what they do, and prepare our work according to what we could do. See? Because we couldn't go on and fight them and blow it up the trains. We would have been destroyed. So we had a job to do behind the line. That's what the Russians later on, the Russian groups didn't understand, see? They said, but they're not fighting all the time. But we wouldn't tell them what we were doing, see? We were organizing.
You were organizing for the landing of the British
brigade. And we got in a contact with the underground movement. We knew they were good. We knew they were 100%. So we started working with them. And they got us in a contact with Czech other parachute groups in between the border of Bohemia and Moravia in that district, which was still in existence. There were very few of them. The Germans wiped them out completely, see?
Which paratroops are these? Which parachute groups are these that you're talking about?
Czech from London. We were lots of us in Czechoslovakia. Yeah. And each one had a certain group of the country, see, to organize. See what I mean? But they were only the intelligent groups sending the messages of intelligent interest to London, not the fighting groups like us.
Now, were you a fighting group or an intelligence group?
We were only intelligent and the fighting.
You were both.
Both.
I see.
Yeah. To organize first, then on end to fight. See, but we couldn't fight. We had to avoid the fighting from the beginning till we had everything organized. See.
Can you tell me something about what you did for the next?
Then we had that Professor Vysotsky and so on, and who was a headman. He had other contact with military personnel, so, you know, who were organizing the underground movement, which was working good. First we contact each other, we found out about them, and they found about us, proof, see, through the other groups, paratroop groups from Britain, which they were in a contact. That's how we find out. And London find out our exact picture of us, see? So we try to send a message through them to send us another replacement of telegraphist. It's, wireless operator and rest of it. But there was no answer from London, from them, later on. It was so funny, you know, what's going on? So we tried the second message, third message. Then we got in contact with Russian group. See, we were desperate. See what I mean? Lost. So we got with a Russian intelligence group in a contact game, which were dropped after. He said, well, what do you think here? And so on. And so we tried to help them. They were helpers. Germans knew the miles away they were Russian, see? They were dressed like a Russian military person.
These were Russians who'd been parachuted?
Parachuted to Czechoslovakia. I said, what's going on? What Russians doing up here? So we found out about the Yalta Agreement.
Okay, so we're already in 1945 here.
Yeah, 44. That was still 44. See? In autumn. I said, what Russians start dropping their own people, see, and coming from Slovakia and everything. We knew about the uprising in Slovakia and everything out there. That was all in connection, see. First in Slovakia, then Moravia, and cut the Germany in half, and so on. But there was a political agreement in Yalta, you know about it, between Stalin, Roosevelt, and Churchill, about the occupation spheres. And British were not allowed to send their supplies to Russian sphere of occupation. Only Russian were allowed. They were dropping their own groups and so on. So we sent another message through underground movement to London. What's the matter with it? We are desperate. We got the people organized. We are waiting. People are slaughtered because of you not sending anything. No answer again. They just completely ignore us from London. Only what they said, you on your own, find your own way. That was the message then, through underground movement. So we were on our own. So we tried to do what we could and supply the Russian groups, see, there was that strike of German divisions up there, wiped us out completely from Beskydy Mountains. Because there were the Russian groups, fighting groups, and they had no other chance to do that. They had sort of unmilitary, just like a horde, I would say. Where weak attacked the weak things, but when the German strengths came out and they slashed them up and separated them and wiped them out completely, see? Yeah, they have losses. Those underground people, untrained, local parties. And then they had we found out they had a lot of German intelligence amongst them, Russian groups. They accept anybody. They had a lot of German confidants supplying the news of their movement and everything, and they were completely under attack all the time.
Do you mean these were Czechs who were giving information to the Germans?
No, they were the working people, Czech-speaking people, working for the Germans. And they came as a partisan of Russian groups. See? For example, we seen the one person in Russian group out there. I recognize him personally. He was a lieutenant in Czech army in France before my commander came to France through Middle East, that Staff Captain Otisk, see, in our 8th squad, heavy machine gun squad in southern France. He came to the squad as a refugee and joined he was a lieutenant in army, he said, in Czech army in Czechoslovakia, and he joined the Czech army in France. And 2 days later on, he disappeared. He was just 2 days in our squad. He disappeared completely. And I found him 1944 in the Russian group, parachute group.
How do you think he got there?
Well, he was working for the Germans. German intelligence, see? He just gave them, he was sent with Germans to southern France amongst the Czech army.
What happened if you ever found out that someone was working for the Germans?
Well, that was the end of him. We had for example, we had one woman. She was Ukrainian. She spoke perfect Czech, perfect German, Russian, Ukrainian. She was working for, she was trained in Berlin for German intelligence. And she was supplied to German Gestapo in a local place up there. And she came in the woods all the time with Czech wedding cakes, you know, looking for us all over the mountains, see, trained with leather coat, you know, and mountain boots and everything, well-dressed and everything. And she came up there looking for us and giving the information to Germans. Germans had even a group dressed as us, this black beret and this corduroy clothing, you know, and they had even the British military belts, you know, those canvas belts, field belts, and everything dressed up like us, looking for us, and try to get the people in the problem.